at the number three, and you listen to Dio Talk.
In this episode of GeoTalk, we speak to Two-Leg Drive about the Spot Messenger. We meet up with a geocacher who's travelled halfway around the world. And we pay tribute to one of Australia's great geocachers. All this and more on GeoTalk. Well, welcome to episode 32 of GeoTalk. It's Darren, Spin Doc Bob, joining you for another episode. First of all, a big thank you to Filma and all the caches around the world who set up World Cache. The Spin Doctors, both myself, Nay and Zach, were able to finally finish this cache, which we've been doing for the last few months. In fact, I started it before Zach was even born, and it's involved geocaches from Canada, the US, Germany, the UK, and ourselves here in Australia. And thank you to my teammates who helped gather all the coordinates together. And we finally found it on the weekend, and it was a nice little adventure for the three of us. We walked along a bit of beach and made our way to the cache and found it, although it was a very high muggle zone. And you can hear a little bit of our audio from that trip on our utters. Now, I know that if you listen to Podcacher and you listen to Sunny, he talks about utters, which is U-T-T-E-R-Z. It's a blogging type of system, a bit like Twitter, which is sort of with text messaging, but utters is with an audio recording, which you call up through your mobile phone, and there's a local number here in Sydney. And there's also one down in Melbourne. So check it out. It's utters.com. And if you want to follow the Spin Doctors and just myself in our maybe every couple of days what we're up to, I'll give you a link in the show notes. Of course, if you're into techno gadgets, the big news over the last few days or few weeks has been the release of the iPhone worldwide, but for the first time here in Australia. It's the 3G version, and a number of geocachers I know have picked up a unit, and I was very tempted. I'm waiting for my contract to end in the next few weeks. I've got coming to the end of a two-year contract. And one of the highlights for me has been that it's got a GPS chip in it. Now, I have heard through listening to a couple of other podcasts and reading through forums that the chip is not the best chip. It's certainly not the ones that you would expect in a high-end GPS device, and that's to be expected. I mean, this is an all-in-one unit. It's an MP3 player. It's a portable-type computer. It's an internet browsing device, and it's a mobile phone. So packing that all into the one device means that you're probably not going to get the best GPS. And at the moment, it only uses Google Maps, but I have heard rumors around that there may be some applications that will not only just tailored to maps, but also to geocaching, that they may come out in the near future. So I'm going to hold off a little bit later for the iPhone and see what other products come out over the next few months before I jump in. I'm not an early adopter. I'm probably the next wave, but we'll see what happens. And talking about new devices, Garmin have brought out a new GPS. It's called the Oregon. Obviously, it looks like they're going to name some of their products after US states. So we had the Colorado come out earlier this year, initially had a few problems, but the Oregon has come out, and it's a very nice device. It's touchscreen. It's a bit like the iPhone or the iPod Touch. It's only got the one button to power it on and off. It's a touch screen interface, and it's pressure sensitive. So if you happen to be using it in an area where it gets quite cold or quite hot, it shouldn't affect it too much. That should be coming out in Australia very soon if it's not already here. Be interested to hear from anyone who's got that particular device and how that's going. And speaking of the Garmin Colorado and Oregon GPS devices, along with the Windows Mobile Pocket PC devices, you can play this new game that's called Where I Go. Now, it has been around for a few months, but in Australia, it hasn't really taken off. And I decided during the week to play around and test out Where I Go. And I downloaded the Where I Go builder, onto my Windows PC and was able to use the emulator function, which is in that builder. And I tried out two of the Where I Go caches. Now, there's one in Canberra and there's one in Geelong that I tried out. And I actually managed to get my way through it and sort of virtually go around the two paths that they have set up. And I've managed to work out the answers. And hopefully in the next week or two, when I go down to Canberra, I might finally solve that. But it's certainly got me interested in maybe setting up a Where I Go cache. And I'd be interested to hear from you, the listeners, what your experience so far has been with it. Have you tried to build one? Have you tried to do one? Have you been overseas and done a Where I Go cache? And hopefully in the next few episodes, we might even speak to Groundspeak about what direction they want to take the Where I Go platform. So listen out for that. Now, at the start of this episode, of course, you heard the Map Monkeys with another Geo Clue as part of the puzzles caches that are going to be released next month, starting in at the beginning of August. So here's a few more hints for some of the puzzle caches that will be appearing in 2 weeks' time.
Hi, this is Caught at Work. Your clue is
off. Sniver has a message for Geotalk listeners. No, Nivis. Man, here.
Hi, this is Tilby, and you're listening to Geotalk, where you can hear interesting interviews with geocachers like Dugan, Macamob. Oh, and you all know that Macamob is Australia's most prolific cacher, the President, Nobodies, and Dax Emu Mob.
Those of us in the Australian geocaching community got some very sad news on the weekend that one of our geocaching buddies, Dax Emu Mob, passed away on Sunday. You may recall that I interviewed Dak or Dave Kruger back in episode number 6 of GeoTalk, and later on in this particular episode I'll replay some of that. But it's certainly, Dak is one of the, well, not pioneers, but certainly one of the great achievers in Australian geocaching. And for a while there, him and Macamob were interchanging the lead as to who had the most number of finds in Australia or for Australian geocacher. And unfortunately, Dak had cancer, and over the last few months, his geocaching slowed up. You can go to the Geocaching Australia forums, and there's a listing in the Victorian geocaching section where a lot of people have left comments and condolences and quite a number of stories and photos of Dave. And to his family and all his friends, our condolences from the Spin Doctors and from all the listeners of GeoTalk, and look, to everyone else, we hope that you remember him quite fondly. And with that sad bit of news, let's hope we can lighten the mood a little bit and get you thinking and get your grey matter going with the GeoTalk trivia question for this particular episode. And once again, this is for New Zealand listeners. We want you to think of what are the oldest still active geocaches. Now, last episode, it was the participants. That was the ERS. This time, it's just the ES, the oldest geocaches that are still around in each state and in the North and South Islands of New Zealand. The answer to that at the end of the podcast. And joining us on this episode of GeoTalk from the ACT down in the nation's capital is Two Leg Drive, also known as Nigel. How are you going?
Not too bad, Darren. Or should I say... Spin Doctor.
Now, I was just saying to you before we started recording, and long-time listeners will know this, that you're the longest still active geocacher in the ACT. Does that come a bit of a surprise to you?
Yes, it does, yes. It was quite a long while ago when I got borrowed my first GPS and found a cache up on Mount Painter in Belconnen. I guess I've had some long gaps over the time, but yeah, there's always a cache or a spot to go find throughout the year. So I guess I've kept those numbers ticking over very slowly, but I guess I can't compete with some of the other big long time caches in the ACT, like Tank Engine and Mountain Biker. They just seem to doubled and trebled and quadrupled my scores long times ago.
Well, it seems like a long time ago when you first introduced me to geocaching back in 2003, but the main reason I've got you on this particular episode is I want you to tell me a little bit about the Spot Messenger, because I saw you have that when we last went geocaching together. Tell me a little bit about how it works.
Yeah, About 6 months ago, probably about 3 months ago, I purchased a Spot Navigator off one of those internet auction sites. I won't mention any names. It's a GPS-enabled global star beacon, which is a bit of an odd thing. People seem to stick GPS receivers in everything these days. But it allows you to send your coordinates from pretty much anywhere in the world where you've got global star coverage. And the global star system is a series of low Earth orbit communication satellites that allow people to make mobile phone calls from pretty much any sort of mainland area in the world.
Well, tell us what the device looks like. How big is it?
Yeah, it's a little yellow handheld device, very similar to an eTrex GPS receiver, the old Garmin eTrexes. It's yellow. It's got four buttons. It doesn't have a screen. It has four buttons and it has four LEDs, and the four buttons allow you to turn it on and off, obviously, and then give you a series of different messages that you can send. One of the messages is an I'm okay, and that sends it to a pre-selected, predetermined list of email addresses that you've set up on the website beforehand. Or you can, one of the other buttons is a send help button, or is in when you're really in trouble, there's an inform 911 button. It's a device that sells in America, so I guess it's a bit American-centric.
You said that you set up a couple of email addresses. Is there a website or a GUI online that you know helps you set all this unit up? And what exactly are the settings that you can do?
Yeah, once you buy the device, you have to get a yearly subscription with a website called Find Me Spot. And they're the sellers of these devices. When I bought it, was $100 a year, and that gives you an unlimited number of messages you can send. And when you subscribe, you get an account, and in that account, as you work through it, you include all the addresses, the email addresses that you want to send it to, and you write a brief message for each of the different situations. And you log your name and your address and next of kin, so they can be contacted in the event of a real emergency.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now you mentioned that it's 99 that has a 911 option. I mean, does it still work in Australia? Will it tell the Australian authorities if you run into trouble? Are you aware of that?
I was reading the website. They have set it up so it goes to an emergency response centre in the US, and in the event that you're in another country other than USA, they'll see your location where you are, and they said that they'd inform the local authorities. I guess I haven't had a need to test this,
which is a good thing.
Yeah, that's a very good thing. But with all of these sort of things, if you're going out travelling in remote areas, and you want to rely on this, I guess you're going to need to tee up the people you're probably going to want to contact in the event of emergency. And I think in my situation, the help button would probably be the most useful in the event of emergency. And I'd probably prefer to use that a lot of the time rather than the 911 button, I guess. Mm-hmm. The only a real emergency, I guess.
Now, on the walk that we went on a few weeks ago, you took this out when we reached the cache location at the Tibimbilla Peak. Why? What was the purpose of doing that? What did you do when you switched it on?
When you switch the device on, it obviously starts to look for GPS satellites, and the GPS receiver gets into lock, and there's a series of light flashes. A simple series of light flashes on those LED displays that let you know that it's in lock. And then when I decided I wanted to send a message, I held the I'm okay button. There's unfortunately a little bit limited information that comes from it. You're only relying on flashing LEDs to give you the status of what it's up to. But when it's about to send a message, when a message is scheduled to send, the light over the button that you press flashes. And it takes up to, I've noticed, several minutes to send a message. And I don't know whether this is, whether it's waiting for a Global Star satellite to come into view, or whether it's just waiting for the satellite to tell it it's okay to send a message. But every time I've sent a message, it's gone very reliably. I haven't missed any messages. I just need to be patient and wait those several minutes for the message to be sent.
Mm-hmm.
In the event if you're in an area where you don't have any GPS coverage, it'll still send a message. You can still force it to send a message even if you don't have GPS coverage. Mm-hmm. So a help message can get through, but that might not be so useful because it doesn't contain any location information.
Mm-hmm. And obviously this is useful for friends and family. I mean, have you had any feedback from them on the when they get messages? I mean, have they found that they're more at ease when you go on long walks?
Because it's been sent via email, they tend to see the messages after I've returned. I guess I'm going to need to tee people up to look at their emails a bit more regularly when I'm on walks. But it is handy that it allows people to know exactly where I've been and or give a pinpointer exactly where I've been. And the emails that you get have a Google Maps link in them, so you just hit the link and it shows you the satellite photo of where you've been, mm-hmm. which is a nice little feature.
Okay. Well, it sounds like it's a great little device to have, particularly for people who are going long distance walks or maybe overnight walks and can't afford an EPIRB. They can use one of these devices to let everyone know that they're okay or if they need help.
Yeah. I think it's a pretty versatile replacement for an EPIRB. You know, you can send okay messages and you can also send help messages. So you can have that feeling of confidence that you know the device is working, whereas an EPIRB, you can only really let them off in an emergency. You can't sort of get that confidence in your EPIRB at any point along the way.
All right. Well, look, I won't keep you any longer. I know you've got a newborn. Have you taken Aiden out geocaching yet?
No, I have to start planning. But I know the timeline is about two and a half months after he's born, so I think I've got another 3 or 4 weeks before I'm allowed to take him out.
And any chance of maybe renaming the team two-leg and four-wheel drive?
I think it'll be still two-leg drive for a while because I suppose I'll be carrying and pushing.
All right. Look, Nigel, thanks very much for chatting on GeoTalk and all the best with the new family.
Thank you very much.
This is Team Rubik. Here is my second clue.
This is Astro John from Team Astro. Your second clue for asterisms GC1C F8J is...
G'day, this is Big Matt and Shell. This week's clue is a no symbol is 5, the sun is 7, and the moon is 9. Good luck.
This is Bass Chaz from the Granite State Geocachers Community Podcast. I gotta tell you, I've always wanted to go to Australia. Someday I'm gonna get my butt down there and be able to go geocaching in that beautiful country of yours. But in the meantime, if anybody wants to come up here to the northeast in the Granite State of New Hampshire, you're welcome to come up. But before you do, be sure to check out www.granitestategeocachers.org. That's the place where all the Granite State geocaches from around the world collect.
And thanks to Bass Chaz for that little call-in. Don't forget, there are plenty of other podcasts about geocaching that are around on the internet. So you don't have to wait for GeoTalk every 2 or 3 weeks. You can check out the Granite State geocaching podcast there, as mentioned by Bass Chaz. A couple of others, the Geocaching Podcast at geocachingpodcast.info comes out every Wednesday Australian time. You can actually listen live at around about 11 a.m. Eastern Australian time on the Wednesday morning, and you can listen to X-Punk X and a few others talk about geocaching matters. And there's also Geocache Radio from the Netherlands. I'll give you a link to those two particular podcasts along with the Granite State Geocaching Podcast in the show notes. Well, last episode, I introduced our first in a series of geocaching tips that will help you get through your geocaching experience a little bit better. And look, if you've got your own tip that you'd like to submit in, please give us a call on 02-800-50-GEO, which is 463. 436, sorry, I should get that right, GEO 436, even I can't remember. So look, put it into your mobile phone. And even if you've got a first to find call or a milestone call, call it in. But let's get back to the geocaching tip. For this particular episode, we're going to look at puzzle caches and how you might solve some of those puzzle caches. I know SuperNay's been doing quite a few down in the Canberra region over the last few weeks. So here's a couple of hints that we've come up with over the last few weeks of trying to solve puzzles. Okay, first of all, you're looking for a pattern in your puzzle caches, usually looking for a 7-8 pattern. Now, by 7-8, I mean that the south coordinates usually have 7 digits. So, for example, in the Sydney region, it'll be 3-3 and then maybe something like 14.695 as an example, just off the top of my head. So you're looking for 7 digits. And then for your easterly coordinates, you're looking for something like 151 and then 05.222. So you're looking for a 7-8 combo. So that's the first thing you're always looking for when you're solving a puzzle cache. The next thing is to see if there is that pattern, whether or not it might have the first 2 digits of the south coordinates and the first 3 digits of your east. Now, as I mentioned, in Sydney, most of the caches have 33 degrees south and 151 east. That might vary, say, in Melbourne, for example, it might be 37 south and I think it's 145 or 141. East. So look for those patterns of numbers, because with most new or with all new puzzle caches, the dud coordinates or the dummy coordinates have to be no more than a few kilometers away from the actual hide. So that gives you a little bit of a helping hand. Okay, the next one, and this comes from Simon Singh's The Code Book. And if you haven't read that, it's well worth a read, particularly the first third of it, which talks about ciphers. And one of the things they recommend, and this is something that a lot of the early code breakers or cipher breakers did, is use frequency analysis. So if the puzzle is encrypted in some way or enciphered, look for where there might be a lot of repeating characters. And that usually is a giveaway that it might be the letter E. And the next most common letters that are used in the English alphabet are the letters T, N, and R along with A. So look for those sort of combinations, and that might be able to help you if it's a substitution cipher. Another handy hint is to look at the actual title of the cache and look into the description. Quite often the title of the cache will give away what the puzzle or the encryption or the encipher has actually that has been used on that particular puzzle cache. So have a look at those. And while you're looking around, if you're still stuck, have a look at the hider's other puzzle caches. They may have hidden others because it is a fairly addictive thing, and some of these people are quite hideous. And you know who I'm talking about, Zitherin and Secret Squirrel over in Canberra and Adelaide. These people will quite sometimes use the same sort of styles, but don't be fooled. Sometimes they change it in subtle ways so that you can't work out what's going on. Another thing is use Google. Have a look at the combination that's being used or some of the techniques that are being used, and look for similar things on Google. So do a bit of a Google search, see if that might be able to help. And the final tip for solving puzzle caches, if all else fails, is email. Email anyone. Email people who have found it, who might be willing to give you a little bit of a hand, or email the hider, who might sometimes take a little bit of sympathy on you. Well, sometimes I've usually gotten back a reply that's a little bit more cryptic than the original puzzle in the first place and has made me have to work even harder. So there's some tips for solving puzzle caches, and hopefully that might help you in your pursuit of them, particularly if you're in some of those areas such as Adelaide, Canberra and Brisbane, which seems to have quite a few of them.
G'day, this is Murph, letting you know that you might also need to research local government in Leeton from 1928 to 1988.
G'day, this is Papa Bear Left. Remember, Gamma Pixidus.
Zactyl here. Excrementitious, the rock-hopping chimp's short-sightedness.
Well, it's Spin Doc Bob here, walking through the streets of central Sydney, and I've got someone with me who's travelled a long way to get here, and that's the mad Russian Tim. Tim, how are you going?
I'm going pretty well. I'm on my final day in Sydney. I've been here since last Sunday. I managed, thanks to Spin Doc Bob's help, to get one more cache to add to my list. And we kind of had a joint DNF on one that I had trouble with in the first place. So now I feel a little better. It's not just me that didn't find it. Also found one on the way back from an event the other night that was really nice. It was 8th of the 8th. And it's really just great to be caching in another country.
Now, it'd be a bit difficult to put you on the spot and get you to compare Australian caches with US caches because you don't have a very large sample size. But you've come here for a pretty good reason. You've been in Australia now for the past week for World Youth Day. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, World Youth Day is, this is the 23rd time that the Pope has called together the Catholic youth of the world. And I was fortunate enough to be at another one in Denver in 1993 back in the States. And it was a much different experience back then. I was still in school and ended up getting sick in the middle of it all. This time I had a little bit of a cold when I got here, but it cleared out and I had a great time.
Well, you've certainly been, pardon the pun, blessed with the weather here in Australia. It's been fantastic for this part-time in winter. How have you found the people down under, and what would you say to people back home if they're thinking of coming geocaching or holidaying down under?
First thing I would say is make sure you pack for a long stay because you'll have a blast when you get here. It's been one wonderful thing after another since I got into the country on Sunday, and I'm very thankful for the experience.
Well, of course, your father, Art Stefano, is a big listener of Podcaster. He's probably listening to this, getting a bit of a blast, hearing you on the internet from the other side of the world.
Well, that should be interesting for Dad to listen in, since he just got done doing a 100 cache medley the other day. They were doing a special near his hometown in Pennsylvania, so now he'll get greetings from the other side of the world. Sounds good to me.
Well, it's been great meeting up with you. I know we've had a few emails and a few phone calls backwards and forwards, and it's finally great to meet you here, and I hope you've had a fantastic time and you have a safe trip back to the U.S., and who knows, maybe we might come and visit you over in New Jersey one time soon.
Well, I just want to say thank you to Spin Doc Bob and to the caching community in general for having so many great caches both here and back in the States, and hopefully I'll be back again to do some more.
As I mentioned at the start of this podcast, last weekend we were sad to hear the news that Dave Kruger, Dax Emu Mob, passed away. And I was fortunate enough to meet him about a year ago at one of my caches while I was doing some maintenance, and had a great chat with him for about 20 minutes in between one of his caching runs here in Sydney. And also in episode 6, I actually spoke to him over the phone and did an interview and found out a little bit about why he liked geocaching and what he got out of it. And in memory of Dave, here's some excerpts from that interview.
I mean, I know it's not all about the numbers. We keep saying that. But yeah, you're sitting second in Australia as far as the number of cache finds. Is that correct?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, so you're just behind Macamob. Tell me, how long have you been geocaching for?
I started on the 21st of September 2003. So, three and a bit years.
Right. So you've come sort of relatively late compared to some of the more, I suppose, for lack of a better term, old-timers.
Yeah, exactly.
And how did you find out about geocaching?
I do a lot of travel in my job, which explains really why I get to cache in so many different places. And I was coming back on a flight one time, and I must have been really bored, and I was reading the in-flight magazine. And there was an article in there written by someone in San Francisco about a friend who was a geocacher. And she described what they did. They went and parked somewhere, and then they followed the needle until they found this little plastic box full of goodies at the base of a tree. And I just thought, oh, yeah, that sounds good. And I didn't think much more about it, really. And the very next week, I was running a training course, and lo and behold, one of the students pulls out a GPSR. And he was waxing enthusiastic about how you can navigate and all this sort of stuff. And I said to him, have you ever heard of geocaching? Oh, yeah, he said. And he told me a bit more about it. And so I bought the GPSR off him. He sold the things. That's why he was flashing it around the class. So I bought a GPSR off him on the Thursday and found my first case on the Saturday. And been doing it ever since.
So are you a Garmin or Magellan user?
I'm a Magellan man. That's why I found so many. I have a great deal of respect for anybody who finds 1,000 cases with a yellow E-Trex.
What is it that you enjoy most about caching? Is it the travelling, or is it the challenge, or is there some other thing?
There are, it's probably the same as a lot of people, but, I enjoy the thrill of the hunt. I enjoy finding the things, pitting myself against somebody else. I like puzzle caches, actually, although I wouldn't say I'm all that good at solving them, but I've done a fair few. But the thing I really like, and I think the thing that stands out, is that it just takes me to places that I would never go to otherwise. Especially now that I'm when I travel. Like I remember saying, I used to go to Singapore twice a year, and my wife would always ask me, did you go out to see Changi? And I'd always say no. And so in 13 visits, I'd never been out there. And on the 14th visit to Singapore, I was a geocacher, and I saw more of Singapore in that weekend than I did for the whole 13 previous visits, including going out to Changi and seeing the War Museum and so on. So that's what really ices it for me. It's just all the new things I see, and even in your own area, stuff you didn't even know existed. That's one thing I really like about my job too. I've met caches in most states now. Even if I haven't met them personally, I know them reasonably well, well enough to ring up and speak to and so on. And that really makes it more enjoyable. When I go to places like Queensland, I can meet with Paul Morfords or the Garner family or Lieutenant Sniper, and we can go out caching together. Or in Adelaide, it's Skippy and Lamb Chops, or SA Parrothead, or Freddo, that I have a pretty good relationship with. And that's what I find really enjoyable, actually, about it. The social aspect of caching really is another thing that I really enjoy.
Well, we're getting towards the end of the podcast, and so it's time to have a look at the GeoTalk mailbag. First of all, I got an email from Professor Dumbledore, who set up a new website for those people who are into geocoins and want to chat about geocoins and buying, trading, designing, and so forth. If you go to geocoins.easybhpbb.com, and you can subscribe there and chat away about geocoins. Also, don't forget the GeoTalk GeoCoin is still available for sale. There's a few still left. Go to the website at geotalkpodcast.com and you can order your GeoCoins. Now, Australian listeners, don't forget there's a special form for you to fill out for cheaper postage, because obviously it's domestic, and then there's another one for overseas listeners as well. And also, overseas listeners, there's still a couple of days left until the end of the month, until the 31st of July, to get your entry into the iTunes comment contest. If you're not from Australia, so they can be New Zealand, Canada, the United States, the UK, or anywhere else around Europe, put a comment for GeoTalk into iTunes, and you can go into the draw to win a gold GeoTalk GeoCoin. One other email that I received during the last week or two was from Rabbito down in Melbourne, and he's not giving me too much info about this, except that there is an event occurring on the 26th of July, which will involve the launch of a new series of caches down on the eastern suburbs of Melbourne. He's told me not to say too much, but he'll reveal all in the next episode, hopefully. We'll hear from him then.
Hi, this is Team Red Roo with our second clue. Don't you think ciphers are just gorgeous?
Hi, this is Sandy from Calumphing 4. Our favourite trains are the Big Engine, the Red Engine, the Green Engine, Donald and Montague.
And now it's time for the answers to the GeoTalk trivia question for this episode. Question was, what are the oldest still surviving geocaches, that is the little containers out in the bush or out in the suburbs, that are still surviving in each of the states and the territories? We'll go through the list, and it turns out it's in chronological order. New South Wales has the oldest geocache, Lane Cove, hidden on the 18th of May back in 2000. Down in Victoria is Melbourne's first, which was hidden on the 10th of August in 2000. Queensland, hidden in Queensland on the 17th of October 2000. On New Year's Day in 2001 was the first South Australian cache that still survives. That's Riverland Geocache. In WA is Albany Quarantine, which was hidden on the 27th of March 01. In Tasmania, North Tassie on the 25th of the 2nd, 2001. In Canberra was Canberra Nature Park, hidden on the 15th of April in 2001. And in the Northern Territory on the 22nd of November 01 was Sungroper number 4. And over in New Zealand, the first geocache hidden there that still survives was on the 11th of the 11th in 2000 in the South Island, Flagstaff Hill, and in the North Island on the 18th of December 01, Marcus and Michael cache number 1.
Hello, this is Damo. The second clue is 6 stone cottages.
Hi, this is Marcus Vitruvius. The first half of East can be found by finding the world where 2 moons, 2 suns and 3 stars combine together. If you succeed in time, the Wheel of Fortune will smile upon you as the light of the moon will shine upon your judgment.
Well, that's all for this episode of GeoTalk. In the next episode, we'll give you the last round of clues for the puzzle caches and a whole lot more. Until next time, safe geocaching.